This is the Gilbert Theater Story.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jason Wetzel. I'm here with Mr. Lynn Pryor, founder of the Gilbert Theater. What's in store for us tonight, Lynn?
Well, I continue to go through having the best time. Our huge, old, original scrapbook, Jason. I mean, I've described this for a little thin ledger, 1913, that I began to fill in. So now it's this great, huge fan thing that I have to read with my head at a 90-degree angle. And every week I go through there and keep turning pages to something new. First of all, I'm pulling everything out now that we talk about, because you have brought tonight archival boxes. You have said to me, we should not be keeping this important information about our theater in this acid paper and all. And I couldn't agree with you more. But thank you for these thoughts, because you frequently say, Jason, you know, we're thinking about 100 years from now. You know, I'm doing a play over at the Poe House, which is built in 1897, and it's about the Poe family. Well, that was 1908 or 1910. We're recreating that. We are, you know, but that's what you're saying. 100 years from now, in 2115, people will be looking back 100 years at these archives and be fascinated.
Think what it would be like if you could go back and have a complete archive of the theater scene in Fayetteville in 1910.
Yes. But thank you. We tend to be so caught up in our own lives and reporting our own lives that we forget that, and thank God that people like you are helping us to correct that.
Thanks.
And so you've arrived with all of these archival boxes and paper, that acid-free paper, and I'm going to be putting all kinds of things in there. And I won't have to use a glue stick.
Yay, no glue, please.
No, I'm afraid we have not been the best shepherds of our ephemera. Our ephemeral material, though, is help is on the way, and thanks to you. But right now, this week, I have pulled out things that chronologically we are making our way through. I do wish that we had more dates on these things. We have all these months and hours and days, but no years. But I think we're about 1968. I mean 1998. 1998, and here's a card I pulled. This is a card that went out to our mailing list in those early years. The Gilbert Theater. Oh, we just found out the big Gilbert G. When you see that in the huge Gilbert G in the garden, or see it on a program, or wherever on posters and so on, James found it and it's called the Celeste.
I believe it's called a Cloister Black.
The Cloister Black G. And that's, Greg Hathaway found that years ago. I thank him for it. But that's the name of it, Cloister Black, the famous Gilbert G. But here I'm looking at that. It says, Gilbert Theater, 647 Brants Lane, presents Headset, an original comedy by Bill Downs. I forget now how I met Bill, we never did meet in person. It was just over the phone. This is the days before the internet. And he'd written this wonderful play called Headset. And it's absolutely the funniest thing that I'd read to that point. It was the light booth of a theater, a down-and-out theater that was putting on a very lame production of Hamlet. It was all about the denizens of the light booth and the actors who made their way into the light booth, and the professional light man, who's one of the son is having to work with his strange dad. It's coming back to me now after 20 years, and it was very, very funny. And I'm so glad that Bill let us do it, as I remember, royalty free. We have done many, many original scripts, as I think I've mentioned in past shows, Jason. I think about a fourth of our work are original scripts. And this one was just marvelous. I don't know if it was ever published, but it should have been if it wasn't. It was in November, I see dates and times, November 20th, drinks at 8, curtain at 8:30, and so on. Directed by Phoebe Hall, still over there doing a marvelous job at Fayetteville State University. At the very bottom. So if you would like to attend, call this number to reserve a seat for the date of your choice and so on. Admission is free. Reservations required. Coat and tie recommended. Did I mention that before?
Very good.
Check office hours. I'm sure I mentioned, was it last time, that I ran the office literally, frequently. I was literally running, finding myself at 10 to 4, out shopping, and the box office hours starting 10 minutes later. But anyway, top coat and tie recommended. Please do not park on Grant's Lane. So that was just wonderful. One of the actors was just driving everybody crazy. Played by George Small, one of our great comic actors. I'm in this barbershop group with him right now, loving to spend time with him after all these years. And actors would wander into the light booth and drive the professional light people just crazy, including the stage manager who was ready to kill every actor. Then one of the actors came in who was really spacey, and he was a clown, a perot, I forget the other name, and he was up there, and he said, "I only discovered that he had about 30 seconds to get downstage and get on stage," and then the man who was playing Hamlet blew open his lines, and this was the line: to be, and then finally someone from the audience screamed, "Or not be!" Anyway, it sounds kind of silly now, but it all worked. Did you remember seeing it, James?
No, I didn't see that one.
Gosh, it was good. Then I'm tearing things out of that scrapbook, getting ready to archive them. Is that the way to say that word? Here's the next thing I have here. The Gilbert Gallery Theater. Oh, this is when we had lost our space, when we were obliged to leave this space, Jason, after 8 years and 49 plays. We were desperate for space, and the Arts Council said we could use their Grand Gallery. We were there for 3 years. So we started calling ourselves the Gilbert Gallery, the theater, mm-hmm. 122 Maxwell Street. But for some reason, we couldn't use that space for something. So we used Greg Hathaway's pottery gallery, next door in the building that used to be, an opera house in Fayetteville in the 19th century.
Really?
And one of my friends in California is named Edmund Reynolds, and he was an authority on Robert Louis Stevenson. And there's a wonderful, in St. Helena, California, in the Napa Valley, there's a wonderful museum devoted to Robert Louis Stevenson. A very wealthy man, his name escapes me, started collecting Robert Louis Stevenson materials, first editions and letters and busts and furniture, and opened this gallery. And when I was teaching children's literature at a community college in California for many, many years, I would take my class there on a field trip because Robert Louis Stevenson, children's literature, Treasure Island and all. And he was the curator, this great friend, Edmund Reynolds. So I got to know Edmund then, and my class always enjoyed that tour, and then we would go out to lunch and so on. So, and then I moved here. I kept up with Edmund, and he called me to say that he'd written a solo play, one a monologue, a one-person play, written and performed by him, and based on the writings of Robert Louis Stevenson. And so he flew out here and did this play for us. All about it was just wonderful. If I'm spared, that's what Robert Louis Stevenson, you know, he had tuberculosis and died young, I think at age 45. And he would frequently say to his nanny or his nurse, "If I'm spared," because he was afraid he might die. Anyway, that was a wonderful evening. And here's the program from it. If I'm Spared, a premiere directed by Marcela Casals. Did so many wonderful directing jobs and acting jobs for us through the years. The Gilbert Gallery Theater is made possible by the generosity of Dr. and Mrs. Gerald Ellison and Greg Hathaway. Let me tell you the story about the Ellisons, Jason. We were doing a play downstairs in the early days, maybe the second year. Forget what it was. Cast was here. Everybody was in our tiny green room. But it was absolutely pouring down rain. And we were sold out, but I wondered if anybody was going to come. And so, sure enough, I mean, as it turned out, people were calling, "Can't make it, we can't come another night," and so on. But who shows up at the door? Two people whom I had never met. And they introduced themselves. "I'm Jerry Ellison. I'm Naomi Ellison." And they were just delightful from the first moment I met them. And we were up there drinking wine coolers or sangria. But then nobody else came but those two. And I said, "Oh," and so they said, "Oh my gosh, are we the only ones here? We're in the living room, there's a fire, and it's very cozy, and we're drinking and having a good time, and even if there weren't a play." And I said, "Let me go down and talk to the cast." So I went down to the green room, and I said, "Guess what, folks?" I said, "We've had a lot of people who just do not, it's a huge storm, they don't want to come, they're going to come another night, but we only have two people upstairs, shall we cancel and ask them to come another night?" And to every last one, they said, "No, yeah, no, no, we're going to do it." My usual routine, had the Ellison sign the wall and come down and sit in the first or second row and had a command performance for those two lovely people. And it was, and that cast, I wish I could remember the play, did a superb job. Well, I have to tell you, that couple was so impressed with our work and that night, I suppose, that they became our biggest angels in the last 21 years.
Wonderful.
Have been on the board, moral support, financial support, in every possible way. It's a tribute to them that I'm making right now, long overdue. Well, not really. I like to think they've been thanked many times. But it was just one thing after another. You know, the point is, had we not, it might have been a different story. Had we not gone ahead with that performance. Anyway, so If I'm Spared was good, very, very good. Then our playwright in residence has been Stephen Miles, who now, his residence is now in Cornwall, near Land's End, in England. That's where he's living in a thatched cottage, writing more good plays. But he is our playwright in residence and sends plays to Robin via balloon or something. And here, been pulling this out of the scrapbook, I almost forgot. The Cape Fear Botanical Garden and the Gilbert Theater presents Mystery Weekend 3, February 13, 14, 1998. People signed up for this. They stayed at the Prince Charles. That's when it was still, before it was a complete ruin. And then we did this Stephen Miles play called Trapped. And you did scenes in First, we met, first of all, the whole all the people who had signed up for the evening, mostly couples, you know, for the they're coming in for the night dinner, and the, you know, it's a dinner theater, but including a night to try to solve this mystery, this murder. And the first scene was at Husk Hardware, in that at the top spot there, that what's that called, the
balcony,
upstairs area. And it's a benefit for the Cape Fear Botanical Garden. And so that was the first scene. And then they followed the scenes, and there was another, we got everybody across the street, and there was another scene in the lobby of the Prince Charles, and another one in the mezzanine. And then everybody had this form, Mystery Weekend. You get your name, address, and phone number, and then you're going, I kind of forget how it worked, but you're supposed to write down the clues where you were able to, you began to think who did the murder. And you wrote down the clues that you that were said something to you. Anyway, so it was a very successful evening. But I have to say that I had a lot of unhappy people the following morning at breakfast when everybody was there, people were happy. And people said, I think the butler did it, I think this one did it. It was just happy. And then I opened the envelope, I didn't know. And there it said, there was no murderer, it was suicide. I practically was on a riding the rail out of town. And had I known, I would have, I don't know what I would have done, I would have said, let's have a rewrite here. People were not at all happy. The murder, Mystery Weekend, ending in the suicide. But anyway, Stephen, I went over to Stephen afterward and said, I wish I had known. Well, that's all I pulled from the scrapbook this week, Jason. I'm enjoying this so much. I hope our listeners are too.
The one question: when you had in the earlier days, when you required coat and tie, how did the coat and tie, the dress of the audience, impact the evening?
Well, what I found out years ago, if you require a black tie, say at a party, very nice party, a handful will wear a black tie, that raises everybody else to a dark suit. If it's dark suit, we wear dark suit, coat and tie. Then that's the fuel wear that, and then the next level will be sweater and slacks. So I'm always worried about that next level. That's why I said, one day somebody came, it was an evening performance, I mean, wine coolers, I mean, the fire in the fireplace. I like to think a lovely evening of theater and socializing upstairs and so on. Someone came in ratty cut-off shorts. Ooh. And that is the day I changed the policy. And I said, that's when I started saying coat and tie. But then some people would come in coat and tie, but then others would come in sweater and slacks. So you see the two levels. But you have to set the bar up higher, because then most people will do the second, just under that. Human nature, I guess.
Well, that harkens back to the class of the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. Right. There was an element of class.
Well, for years and years, I wouldn't dream of going to anybody's theater without wearing coat and tie. And to this day, I still have slacks and a dress shirt and a tie and maybe a sweater. It's not quite as formal as I was. But I think this is out of respect for the art of theater.